This is Camp Hacker. Come find our show notes and our blog for camp directors and leaders at camphacker.tv.
Good day and welcome to our podcast. This is Camp Hacker episode 119, recorded on the 27th of November, 2019. On today's show, fantastic focus groups. If you enjoy the Camp Hacker podcast, we would love it if you subscribe to Camp Hacker in whatever podcast app you have on your phone. If you love us even more, you can give us a review on wherever you get this podcast, and it will help more people find the show and let us know what we're doing that you like. This Camp Hacker podcast is sponsored in part by RadTags. Designed by a former camp owner and director, RadTags is about connecting people to who they are, the camp they love, and the accomplishments they experience there. RadTags bracelets and tags helps your camp community stay connected to their happiest place. Find out what RadTags has to offer your camp at zoic.ca/rad. That's zoic.ca/rad. Also, don't forget to visit RadTags at the ACA National Camp Conference. Be one of the first 50 people to booth 522 for a special gift from RadTags and GoCamp Pro. RadTags, be and be known. Thanks for letting your awesome out, Camp Mavericks. We hope you enjoy the Camp Hacker Show.
Hello, Camp Pros, and welcome to the Camp Hacker Podcast. My name is Travis Ellison. I'm a summer camp marketing and strategy consultant, and I do such things as the Summer Camp Professionals Group on Facebook, with this crew, and campmavericks.com. And welcome to the show.
Hi, my name is Dan Weir, and I work for the YMCA of Long Island. I've worked for over two decades in YMCA camping, and my current position, I bounce around all of Long Island developing their day camps.
And my name's Gabrielle Riel, and I'm one of the camp directors at Camp Oro. And Camp Oro is an all-girls camp where we focus on creating a positive female environment, and we do that in French and in English.
Welcome to both of you. Sorry that Joe can't join us. We got a chance to catch up with him for a second on the phone, and then he had to take off and do some family stuff. So great to see you both. And we're recording this on the eve of Thanksgiving in the States. So happy Thanksgiving, Dan.
Thank you.
And for all of those of you listening, just know that at this moment, we were thinking of you and all of your holiday preparations. I don't know. All of a sudden got punchy. I'm not sure. What we're going to talk about today is actually a little more serious topic in terms of its big effect on it can have on your camp and the way that your program runs. I want to speak today about the importance of running focus groups. And I'm going to introduce this idea before I throw to Dan and Gab and talk about this exercise that we often do, with all of our clients called Find Your Karen. And this is how I get camps to find the right people to come to focus groups. And we're going to talk about lots of different ways and different groups to bring together, but I think this is kind of the first step. And so the exercise is called Find Your Karen. You can find it. We'll make sure that it goes in the show notes and you can download it, but it's Karen, because our favorite ever camp mom is Karen Elliott, and we just wanted to duplicate her. So we wanted to find more people like Karen to do it. And so it'll give you some criteria to who to look for in your camp community to be the people that you want to duplicate. Doesn't have to be a Karen, could be a Ken. Gender's not important. For us, it was Karen. And I try to get my camps to start with a small group, 3, 4, or 5 families that are sort of your best contributing families. You can see in the exercise some things to think about when finding it, and then bring those people together. So we're going to say focus groups, and you're going to think of focus groups that you've seen on TV shows with one-way glass and like lots of psychological questions. And I think that focus groups for camps that are just beginning them can start with identifying a couple of families, maybe 4, maybe 5, and just having coffee with those people, taking them out and asking them some questions. I would say that what makes focus groups valuable is recording the information that you get and then thinking about ways that it can affect your programming, your hiring, et cetera. And I know, Dan, that in your new job, you're thinking a lot about focus groups. What sort of stuff is going through your mind?
Yeah, you know, so for me, I'm 12 weeks into working here, and I'm coming into a situation where I don't have the history of working at this camp, and I really want to find the essence of it. And not that I don't believe what I've currently gotten from the staff and from my own eyes is the essence, but just, you know, kind of this thirst for information. So, I really believe in that parents know what they want, but they don't know how to articulate it. And a focus group for me is bringing a group of parents together and really digging deep on that. And so the nice thing is that I'm actually not the director of the program, right? So like the parents trust me because I'm associated with the camp, but they don't know who I am. And I can have a pretty big conversation with them. And wherever it goes, keep it organic as possible. Have some prompting questions going in there, but really, really uncover what's happening at the camp, you know? And so for a little while, in one case, I was hearing from one director that, you know, we're priced too expensive. And that's why I hear from families. And then when talking with a group of families, it was actually, they saw the value in the overall price, but it was some of the other things that go on in camp that they thought were too expensive. So there's a lot of clarity you could find beyond just these simple concepts of being too expensive or parents don't trust you. Well, what part do they not trust about you? You know, and
right.
So I've had some really good moments in these. I could go into how I run them, but for me, I think it's been the most valuable feedback. And whether you agree with it or not, the feedback you get, it's your parents' perspective. And just showing that you care and showing that you're working on it, it totally matters. And sometimes working on it is educating them. You know, that's the other part too, is like, you're like, you find out that like, oh, we are doing that. Just nobody knows we're doing that.
Right.
And that's the other thing a focus group uncovers is that you don't necessarily have to change everything you're doing. You just have to change how you're saying it. You know, that's another thing that comes out. And also you can just find out what they like about you. So you can protect it.
Right.
That's the other thing. So.
Yeah, for sure. And Gab, I know that Wero has history of running focus groups. A mutual friend of all three of ours, Joanna Warren Smith, often talks about the lessons that she's learned from focus groups. And I'm going to go to Gab in just a second, but I don't want to forget this one thing that Joanna says all the time that always fascinates me. In her focus groups, this happens every year, and I think she runs between 10 and 20 focus groups for camps every year. And one of the lessons that she's learned that is just so simple is that parents' biggest frustration when they are shopping for camps, so when they're at that stage of shopping around for camps, is that camps don't return their call. That she will often have, camps, families, I'm sorry, that have tried to connect with, tried to buy four camps before the fifth one returns their call. And it's such a simple lesson from these things, but such an incredible customer service opportunity. If you're a camp that simply answers the phone or return phone calls or returns emails, you are already so far ahead of some of your competition just by that simple customer service act. So that's a big thing I know that Joanna's got from hers. Gab, for you folks, what sort of stuff did you focus on when you were doing focus groups?
I think that's right there. It's a motivation. So when I talk to colleagues and I talk about focus groups, often when they're being serious with me or real, they'll say, I kind of just don't want to hear what we're doing wrong.
Yeah.
And I really understand that. But for me, my experience hasn't been that. The benefits that we've gained out of our focus groups is that our families get a buy-in, it's marketing, and we have a little bit of a better understanding of direction of where we should be going. So for example, when we talk about, we ask questions such as, what do you know about staff training? What do you envision our staff training looks like? How many days is it? What topics do we talk about? So a lot of the times they vaguely have an understanding. It's usually the average of what our families think. It's about 2 to 3 days of staff training. They think basically we're setting up camp. And so I show them all of the subjects that we do. I try to make sure it's not too long. Like I'm not trying to sell them anything. I'm just showing them what we do.
Yeah.
And then I ask them, would this have been interesting to you? And unanimously, our families are like, yes. So I asked, well, how would you like to get this information? Why would this be interesting to you? But I already know that this small group of individuals, if I sent out a newsletter, they probably wouldn't have read it and they probably wouldn't have seen what we are doing. But because they're a captive audience, I'm able to sort of insert that information. And then I challenge them in saying, if I wrote that in a newsletter, would you read it? They sort of smile and say no. but we brainstorm how we could get this out there, because it is important. So they're now part of what we're doing. There's a buy-in and they're giving me direction. So for the most part, if they're coming to your focus group, they are excited about your camp. And I'm not saying you should only bring people that have a buy-in to your camp.
Yep.
But what I'm saying is that it does create that buy-in. And I find it, and there's certain things that I will hear, like, well, you called me back within 12 hours. And I really appreciated that. You know, I never knew that was something that was important, but because one of my families told me. So, you know, it can, as Dan said, it can be really informal, non-threatening. But I think some people are very nervous because they don't want to hear the negative. And in all reality, usually they might have a little tips on things, but it's usually not. I haven't had an experience yet where families are upset. They're more excited to talk about their kids. And that's a tip that I would say is like, start talking about, tell us why you
warm them up with talking about their kids. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Dan.
Just one quick point. I think that's really interesting. Like, I don't want to run focus groups because of the bad things I'll hear. More than likely, the people who will show up for a focus group are not people who have negative stuff to say. And so that's, I would allay that fear. The chances of hearing bad things are slim if there's someone who will commit some time to sitting down and talking to you. So Dan, what were you going to say?
No, I just, exactly what you said. And then also with Gab, these people are like, to quote two books, raving fans, right? Like, these people really care and really want to see you succeed. And that's what a raving fan is. And then the second is, like, just exactly what Gab said, they're your sneezers. That Seth Godin term where they'll take and spread the information out. Like, 100%. I can't tell you how, like, I've now, with one of the focus groups, I've just emailed a few times and they're emailing me back, go keep me in the loop, you know, and they're the ones that tell everybody, and then they market for you, you know.
And I would say that's, I mean, Travis and I have talked about that often, but I do the same with my staff. And when we're trying to make policy changes or we're trying to go in a little bit of a different direction, I create a focus group and we talk about how do we, you know, deal with cell phones at camp or whatever you want to talk about with your staff. You create a focus group with them. But by the end of the conversation, there's a buy-in and we're creating a direction, but they are talking to other people about it. And they're the advocates and it makes that transition a lot easier. And that the sneezers, as you say, for our families, the value in that is, it's not tangible. You can't even put really a price tag on it, but there's such a captive audience that you would never be able to express this through a newsletter or Instagram post or even a video. They learn the language in that focus group. They're developing that and they're able to translate it. And especially for camps that are having a hard time holding on to staff members, for me, this is a plan when you're talking to parents about our staff and their training and where do they go. You're planting those seeds that we want those parents to be sending their kids back to us as CITs and supporting them in their careers as camp professionals with us and not saying, no, it's time for you to get a real job. So sort of having that 5-year plan of talking about certain things so that you're building that base and you're building that language, I think is really helpful. And then getting them to help you with that direction is it just also builds your own confidence that you know you're going in the right direction.
Right. Gab, when you've run focus groups, what's the atmosphere? Where do you take them? Where do you bring them? Like, what's the setup, the physical setup? I want to talk specifics about the questions, but what's the physical setup that you do?
I've done two different setups. So I've done, in somebody's house where they've happily hosted us, and it's a large home where either people, you know, have easy access to parking and et cetera, et cetera. And I've done restaurants. And the restaurant is feel is very nice, and it has a little bit of a different vibe where we're talking about one specific thing. And the home one is usually for our families. So the families when we usually, you know, ask somebody from camp that has a house in that neighborhood that would be interested in hosting us. And usually they're excited about outreaching to other people. And just for some families to see that a family's hosting our event also just sort of gives us that extra points. And then the restaurant piece is something that we do with alumni or with our staff usually.
Right. This episode of the Camp Hacker podcast is sponsored by Rad Tags. Rad Tags is outfitting camps with personalized keepsakes that speak without saying a word. Rad Tags allows you to show someone they belong, building a relationship that goes beyond their last day at camp. With the goal of helping camps create awesome recognition and affiliate programs that last beyond the summer, Rad Tags is doing a monthly giveaway for GoCamp Pro listeners. Just email your answer to the following question to matt@gocamp.pro and be entered to win 5 silicone bracelets with the Rad Hand sign. Each month, we'll pick a new winner. This month's question is, how important are camp recognition programs to your legacy or camp tradition? Don't forget, email your answer to matt@gocamp.pro with Rad Tags contest in the subject line. Also, Rad Tags is coming to ACA National. Be one of the first 50 people to booth number 522 and shout out, I'm a GoCamp Pro podcast listener, for a special gift from Rad Tags and us at GoCamp Pro. To find out more about how Rad Tags can elevate your camp program, visit zoic.ca/rad. That's zoic.ca/rad. Rad Tags. Be and be known. Dan, what's the setup you're doing for your ongoing focus groups?
Yeah, so the nice thing about the Y is that we have YMCAs I can use. Mm-hmm. So basically get about 10 people in a room. We email out to select groups and just say, we just need 1 to 2 families from this group, 1 to 2 families from this group. And usually you can get together 10 people pretty easily. And it's good to go for at least 10, because then if you have a few cancellations, you know, you still get the consensus. And then it's funny. I kind of just run it like as like, okay, we have, I actually come here for an hour. My goal is to get you out of here early. If, at that time, if you want to take off, you can. If not, I'll just stay here until the end. And the last one I ran went for 2.5 hours.
Oh yeah.
I think 4 moms made best friends out of it. Yeah. It was really fun to watch. But, the beginning of it, I talk about how, we're here just to learn and to get better, become better. And, you know, like, I hope you came here, wanting to share. And I want to let you know that I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to share some things about my own kids and share some things about my life. And so you can understand where we're at and understand that I understand your time is valuable. So I'm going to keep this moving. And there might be occasionally a time where I say, you know, that is a really personal story, or thank you for sharing that. I'm going to talk to you after the session. Right. Just know that the goal is just for us to have an organic conversation about what things are going well. And then, I always throw out an icebreaker just to get them talking. So like, you mm-hmm. know, like, it's cold now. So like, if you could be anywhere warm, where would you be and why? And usually everyone, you know, says something like Jamaica or Florida or something like that. And then, I'll lead right into the first question is something positive, just so they could get that fear out of their mind that this is going to be a negative session. Mm-hmm. And, just why do you send your kids to the camp? And, as we get some responses, I will compliment them and say, thank you for sharing that. Does anyone else feel that way? Kind of so they could see how the flow is going to go. And then I ask some broader questions. You know, I could read through some of the questions I have, but to be honest with you, the last one I ran, I only got through 2 questions. And then it was like, that was really it. So why do you choose to send your kid here? Anything we do to make your life easier? What type of impact does the camp have on your child, on your family? How do you describe your kids' camp experience to family and friends? What do we need to improve on? If we were closed, where would your kid go during the summer? Mm. Are we affordable for your family with registering? Do you prefer to register just 1 session at a time, or do you want to buy everything at once? Is there a program or activity you'd like to see us offer? Is there anything that we didn't get a chance to talk about? You know, and so really, the only two questions I definitely ask are the beginning positive one, and is there anything that you want to make sure you got to talk about? I do my best to always work in, like, if we were closed, where would you go? So like when I start bringing up other camps, I'll say like, oh yeah, you know, this was a question I wanted to ask. I just didn't know how to ask it. You know, like, tell me, you know, like if we weren't open, where would you go? And it's really insightful, you know, like the, who you think your competition often isn't your competition,
right.
You know, like, the last one I ran, I was shocked. It was all camps and places I didn't even hear about. And I was like, okay, great. Good to know. Thanks. You know, like all my Google searching and all my even anecdotes from the staff were completely off, you know? So yeah. And the goal is just to make them feel good, and to respect their time. But the insights is just invaluable. I can't reemphasize enough, you know, like, their perspective is just as valid as your staff's. Sometimes they need to be educated like your staff's. Sometimes they need to be, have their things answered. They're sharing it because they like you, because they want you to see you better. Even if they don't send their kids to you again, they want to see you improve.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
I love that you open up with a question about their kids. I will say, just as by way of preparing yourself if you're new to leading a focus group, that I have yet to lead a focus group with parents where one parent didn't cry, where they were so touched by camp, or I always make sure, one of the things I always ask them is, what were you scared of before your kid came? And that often makes people cry. I mean, it's just, it's connection to their kids. So it's pretty close to the surface for them. It's easy to touch a nerve, but it has made me tear up. I'm not a crier, to hear parents talk about how camp has impacted their kids, the change, and they've seen their kids. So that is also a question that I always make sure I ask. What change have you seen in your children because of camp? And that one is always really great. And that is, again, like Gab's, trying to find things that you can communicate back to other families from this meeting. That is a question I found really gets good, honest, impactful responses. Were there some other questions, Gab, that you've asked of your families that Dan didn't mention?
I asked them what they're nervous about for their mm-hmm. children in the future. So, so what, you know, right now world is shifting, world is changing. What are some of the things that you're anxious about for them in university, out in the world? Just to gain that sort of perspective and hear their anxieties. And I find that, again, some of the things we're on point with at camp, and some of the things, it's the stuff that I haven't heard about. And just allowing them to voice those things, I find brings it back to the fact that we do care about their children in the future. And a lot of it has to be that their kids are alone. Their kids won't know how to do what they need to do at work. Their kids won't know how to do what they need to do in universities. And it allows us to brainstorm, what kind of network could camp help provide with that? What kind of support? Is that something that you see that would be helpful or useful in the future? And often with what you're talking about with families, you know, getting teary-eyed or emotional over their own children, a lot of what we do at camp is that support. And that's something that might not cross their mind. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for camps to expand past the physical site themselves.
Yep.
But just asking about, you know, okay, your kid 15 years from now, where are they at? What are you nervous about? Et cetera, et cetera. So just helping us with that. And then I think when we're talking also about what parents are saying, this is a prime opportunity to get testimonials. So having somebody there typing everything up, I've brought cameras. And so afterwards I've asked people to restate what they've said. I would have a little bit of a backdrop, and they're usually very happy to do so. But if that's not the setting for you, or maybe that's not your camp's vibe, having somebody record the information and say, like, you said this, we'd love to use it. Are you down for us using it? That's a wonderful opportunity. Usually I have yet to have somebody say no. So having somebody record these sort of sound bites is pretty awesome. And then you can also throw it out there and say, in our inner focus group, you know, this is, here are some of the comments and here's some of the stuff that we talked about, can help other people understand sort of the process that we're trying to do, as Dan said, to learn just so that we can get better.
One of the things I picked up on that you just said, Gab, is a frequent bee in my bonnet, this helps us to better serve families, to provide services that they may not expect from their summer camp, which I think builds trust and allows them, you know, more tools to talk about us in their community. But it really does make a difference when we can ask them outside of camp, what is hard about being a parent to you? And that gives us some ideas that maybe just as simple as, you know, pulling that family aside from, based on something you heard, pulling that family aside after everybody leaves and saying, you know, we have this, our camp has connected with a social worker or, you know, someone who's a family counselor. If you're struggling with one kid or a child of yours is, you know, I've heard families talk about how bullied their kids are at school and how much they appreciate camp because the kid is a place they can fit in. And, you know, it's a nice place to be able to step up and say, we have resources in our community that we would love to share with you and be able to help out with that.
And we even had a family that a mother and a father that shared how much of a difficult time their daughter was having at school at the moment. Mm. And it was in, I think it was September. And so she had a hard time the whole year before with a group of girls, and that was continuing. And afterwards we were able to have a conversation, and I strongly suggested that sometimes at one point, if teachers aren't stepping in properly, or the school's not stepping in, just the parents to step in and say, we're moving your schools makes a big difference. Right. And the school had never said that to them, and they actually did move her to a different school, and things were much, much better once November settled in. I find that our families are insanely undereducated on the type of intentionality and readiness that we do.
Yep.
And I sometimes like to think of it as, you know, a high-end chef. And I think that people would be very surprised about a chef getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, going to the market, you know, talking about the different types of cuts of meat or vegetables or whatever, and how they, you know, sharpen their knives the night before, and how, like, all of these things, you know, at the end you're eating a, you know, a steak or a cauliflower or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily think about all the things that were done. And I think it's, for a lot of parents, it's shocking. And I think for a lot of camp directors, it's shocking that they don't think that we put a lot of effort into it. So I think this is a place where you can really bridge that gap.
Yeah.
And help people understand that we're really in this industry because we care. And I think that's an education that we're tasked to do over and over again. Mm-hmm. But it's an opportunity. It's a wonderful opportunity.
For sure. And that's such a good point, the over and over again. I mean, this is the camp director's life, is having to reinvent staff every year. And, you know, the older I get, the more my staff stays the same age. And, you know, like, we covered that 3 years ago. Why? Well, because you weren't here. And so it's another part of accepting the role as a camp director is understanding that this kind of education has to happen every year. You know, you might put out a great blog post. You might put out that amazing video that Bert Sherrill put out 5 or 6 years ago, and it was, everybody was such a hit, or that Pocono Springs one about why 5 weeks that I loved so much last year, and it was a hit at the big time at the time. But camps have to remember to repeat those things, and that's the same thing with focus groups. You have to get these parents in and repeat the same messages. I think you eventually get better at them, but something that was helpful and really stood out to your parents 3 or 4 years ago, you can use again, because you have such a different mix of parents, and it'll give some parents who've been there a long time a little bit of pleasure to say, oh, I already know. And new parents can blow their minds again by some reintroducing some of these things. And the simple act of making focus groups continuous, happen every year, you know, not waiting for a big incident to happen, or not waiting for, you know, planning a big change to start to talk to your parents. Having this conversation over time builds trust and builds your capability as a camp to serve those families.
Yeah,
Gab, I like that you have done focus groups not just for families. Actually, before we go there, I want to talk about your staff focus groups, but for either of you, have there been specific target groups of families that you have gone after?
For me, I'm a big fan of year two. Mm. I find that if we get our families into year three, they're almost lifers. Right. So I'm a big fan of year two because they've made it to that first year. If I go after our first year families, big chances they're going to come back in the second year. But I find that there's a cool insight in the second year because the awe effect is gone. So they've had it for a second year and so the education is also a little bit low, but something made them choose. So there's something kind of cool and magical about the second year families. And sort of the world's their oyster still at that point. They're like, oh, she really liked it. Oh, we'll send her back another year. And we just want to find out. And a lot of it has to do with the camper just enjoying themselves. Like, well, it seemed like it was a good experience. So we decide why not. And I find that it's a prime opportunity to educate them so we can get them locked in for that second year. Our first year families, we put a lot of effort into surveys, we call them after the experience, we call them during the experience. So there's a high already connectivity. Mm-hmm. We have invited first year families. They come, but they don't know why they're there. So we still do it, but I find our second years is where there's a little bit more of a buy-in.
Yeah.
We have a little bit more of an insight and it was a second year experience. So they didn't get all the sort of high connection that we usually give our first year, campers. Right. So that I like those individuals with their insight, but, I also find obviously fourth and fifth year families very important to have a conversation. Yeah. I just think in direction, your second years can give you some good stuff.
That's cool. Dan, are you talk about targeting by area. Is that really the thing you're doing? Because in your new job, it's just focus on sort of a broader get to know you stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. Like right now, I'm just doing broad. But as I dive deep and start finding more issues with retention. Like for instance, I looked at a few camps and gender is not equal. So like there, I want to do a focus group with just parents of girls. And where there was one camp that has more boys and girls and it shouldn't, it should be about equal. Figure out what's going on. What are we missing? So I think you have to look at your statistics of where your holes are. I think you have to, the best camp directors I've met are the ones that are hungry for knowledge and hungry to know, and, and that can admit that they're not perfect, those camp directors, and they don't have to be the one to be like running the focus group. If it's hard for you to hear, There's talented people out there that can run for you. It's just amazing what could come out, the misconceptions that can get spelled out. Like, the one I just ran, I found out the parents were sending their kids to child cares, not camps. Right. So here I am thinking we got to sharpen our game of camp. We really have to explain why we're different than a child care.
Right.
And child care is basically you come there and today we're just doing this, kids, here we go, and it's not bad. It is what it is. But it's not the community and the feeling that a really transformational camp experience can have. And I would only know that from doing a focus group. I was just looking at other summer camps. I just thought the parents were informed, I think you have to be hungry to do better and to find out. And then from there, it's just about getting the right person to facilitate the group. And it could be a really powerful group, but it's really driving my knowledge or my quest right now is just to figure out what makes this thing tick.
Yeah.
And then from there, Gab's had the benefit of being at our operation for a while and can start getting into the finer questions of, well, how can we do this better? How can we do that? Like, I'll definitely be running a focus group for just parents of girls pretty soon at this one branch, because I need to know what's happened, you know?
Right.
But yeah.
I think it is really important to consider bringing in somebody from the outside, whether it's a board member, an alumnus who has some skills, whether you hire somebody to do some of this information gathering for you. Totally great. Even if you're in the room to listen, but you're not the facilitator, might be some good, a good tip as well. So I think that's worth reiterating what Dan said. And there's something else you said that made me think of a really great question that'd be worth making sure. Maybe it'll come back to me. Something you said spawned in a little question in my head that I thought we should make sure we write that down. Dan, you run not just I'm giving it away. You run not just parent things, you run staff focus groups too.
Yep. I love running staff focus groups. I like running staff focus groups. I love especially disgruntled staff focus groups. So things that didn't go well the year before, I love sort of sitting in a room and saying, this didn't go well, let's talk about it. And I like talking about it in people's personal experiences and then nobody coming in with a solution. But maybe together brainstorming solutions. So the difference between the two is that sometimes somebody says, you just need to do this, or maybe we should have done this. And I find that that's, as a director, that's sometimes frustrating when staff members make a suggestion, because I've already done all of the things that they have suggested, or it's not very possible. But when we do it together, they already understand that I have experience, and I'll tell them what has been done, why I think maybe things didn't work well, and then what do they think? And then we go from there. So it helps me with my training. And one of the things that I like bringing up is I'll get from staff members that are returning staff members, maybe third or fourth year returning staff members. And I ask them, what did they wish new staff members and young staff members knew more about? You know? And then we talk about that. And we say, how can we get them to get to that point? And often what happens is that they realize they need to be teaching on the job, not just during staff training. And I show them the sessions that we've done, and they go, oh yeah, we did do that session. Oh yeah, we did do that session. So I say, what was missing during the summer? And then they're like, oh, maybe we could have. And I was like, what, you guys? Oh, well, if you want to this year, that would be great. sure. You know me, just trying to support. So the thing is that, again, with the same thing with your family focus groups, it is about buy-in. It is about word of mouth marketing. And it's about also you as a director getting direction. And that focus group is going to be, as we say in French, porte-parole. So they're the ones that are going to be bringing the story to other people. And there's usually an excitement that comes with that. And the thing is that they're part of it. And what I find helps seals the deal is, a couple of weeks later saying, after our conversation, here are some of the steps we're going to be taking this summer. And sometimes it's not big. It's, in our session, we're going to adjust these two points. And during the summer, we're going to have a checkpoint in the first week and another checkpoint on the sixth week. And just that, staff are like, oh, amazing. They're part of something, and they'll reinforce it. But they learn how to talk about camp. They learn how to talk about camp professionally. And they also learn how to communicate what they need to do to other staff members during the summer. So they become your, support staff. And it's also things like, one of the reasons why we've gone from, hour long sessions of lecturing to 15 minutes, where people would say, I just stopped listening. It's too much information. Okay. Well, this is, I hear you. We have to change it. Like the reality is sometimes you have to change things. But it's really the buy-in piece, and it's a togetherness. So, that you're creating a sense of togetherness, and you have to have food when you're meeting with staff.
You do.
Yeah, you got to feed them.
Yeah, candy and water though go very far away with families too. Yeah. Just putting it out there.
Yeah.
Starburst. I like always have Starburst because nobody really has a allergy to Starburst and right. water right. available. And then I always try to put out fresh fruit like bananas or something. You know, but yeah,
that's awesome. Anything else that you think you really want to pass on about focus groups, Dan?
You said it earlier, and I just want to reemphasize it. There's nothing more vulnerable for me than talking about my children. Mm-hmm. And just thinking about them having a negative experience, let alone an impactful one that's going to stay with them for years, can bring me to tears. And yep. just I think you or whoever's facilitating needs to create that space where it's okay to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And if they say something that you're not attacking them, if you don't like what they're saying, you could do that. I would love to follow up with you, but right. yeah. It's so vulnerable to talk about your children. I started explaining it to teenagers of like what it's like to be a parent. And the yep. way I've explained it is, so picture you're in love, and not just like normal love, like you're crazy in love, like the type of love that literally makes your brain go crazy.
Yep.
And now take that love and times two, because you feel like your child's part of you. Mm-hmm. And now take away any lust, because you that's not something you'd have towards your child, and yeah. add more love in there. And that's the amount of love a parent has for their child, literally a crazy amount of love that just is never ending. And with love comes fear, you know, and mm-hmm. vulnerability, and just, yeah, I just can't reemphasize enough to really, you know, if you're running a focus group and that thing's running long, you can't end it. The last one I ran for 2.5 hours. I yep. came home, I got yelled at by my wife. Right. I didn't, you know, I still would have ran it that long. I started bagging my stuff up about two hours in, because I was like, this was supposed to be an hour, you know, yeah. and they kind of got the hint, but they kept going. Right. But I caught them in the parking lot afterwards, all chatting, and you know, they emailed me afterwards, told me how great it was and how they made a friend, you know. So just know that you provide something special no matter what, if it's summer or not, you know, and to respect that vulnerability.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Yeah. My niece's mother said that it felt like her heart was running around unprotected outside of her body. And I was like, yep, that sounds probably pretty accurate. I had an opportunity to work with Jay McCutcheon, who does camp consulting and, advises you on business decisions, et cetera, et cetera. And she would do these fresh eye tours, which you'd come to your camp, evaluate your camp with her, you know, her own eyes, and you'd have a conversation. And I remember telling her she was available just before the summer. And I remember saying to her, you know what, not this summer, because I have a lot of things I want to change. Can we do that next summer? And she said, I understand. There's always things that do need to be changed, but let me come this summer, because I want you to have confidence in the things that you're going to want to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing sometimes when we're hesitant to do these focus groups, you already know what you want to fix. You already know that maybe your registration system isn't the best, or maybe you could do more newsletters and outreach, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you have a list of to-dos. Don't think of your focus group as something afterwards you're going to have a whole extra list of to-dos. For me, it creates more confidence in yourself
right.
in the direction that you're going. So if you're like, yes, we actually do need to get a new registration system, you already knew that, and it's getting confirmation. So you're confident in that decision, or actually everybody in the room is fine with it, so you can put your energy somewhere else.
Right.
So all camp directors have a lot of to-do lists. It will never end. But this piece it's going to help you in feeling confident. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, it is marketing the best parts of your camp. And it's creating those individuals that are able to sneeze that information out to other people. So
yeah.
Not to be too afraid of it.
I'm going to sneak this in almost as a sneaky second tool of the week. But we had a discussion in campmavericks.com this week that our monthly book club, we did a book called The Art of Gathering by Priya Parker. And it's a really fascinating book and great discussion that we had. And she talks about some of the things I think would be really helpful for the not the informal, hey, can I take one family out for coffee and just get a little bit of insight, but a more formal bring everybody together meeting. And so I would advise you to check that out. It's a really great book. Priya's got tons of good online interviews and a TED Talk, more than one TED Talk, but a TED main stage talk. And it's really interesting stuff. And she really talks about the idea of getting them off their script, getting the people in the room off their script. And so I think some of the questions that people have been, that Gab and Dan have been talking about that work for them, I think it's important to just sort of shake people up a little bit and help them just open up, as Dan said, work on getting them to open up. So if you found this useful, I would invite you, everyone who is listening to this on their phone, if you found this discussion useful, I would love it if you would just take a screenshot of this show so they can see the title and text it to a camp director friend. The way that we spread the word about these shows is through you telling other people. So if you're on YouTube and watching us there, then screenshot this on YouTube and send it out to a friend. Tell them why you like the episode. That's incredibly helpful to us. Also, if you want to leave a review on iTunes because you're inspired by this discussion, you can go to camphacker.tv/iTunes and find that there. So then this moves us on to our tool of the week.
Tool of the week.
If you have been shared this episode by a friend who screenshotted it and texted it to you and don't know about the tool of the week, we ask our panelists every time to bring a tool, something that makes them a better camp director. And I'm going to begin with mine. I'm inspired by this tool because it's an idea that I love. And I want to thank Seth, who is a longtime Patreon supporter of the Camp Hacker podcast, for sending me some stickers from his camp, Arrowwood in Tennessee. And if you know me, you know that I love stickers. But Seth had a really great idea that I really love. And we've done it at the camp that I'm on the board of. We've done it with some clients as well. And that is to provide some stickers that are kind of inside jokes. So I'll have to describe this. I'll show it to people who are watching on YouTube, but I'll describe it to people who are listening. Sticker number one is a brown old Ford, like a cartoon style, illustration style Ford F-150 with a whole bunch of inner tubes in the back of it. I messaged Seth and I said, obviously going out tubing with your kids is a big deal. And he said, interesting thing is that this is from a long time ago. It's the alumni's memory. I was like, oh, that's so smart. Do something that celebrates a certain time in your camp's history and people will love it. And I think it could be a great fundraiser. It'd be the sort of sticker that, like, a sticker of your logo is awesome and you should definitely make those. But I love ones that are about the community and would get the community to buy into it. And the other one that I absolutely adore is a sticker of an Algene covered in stickers. And it is a whole bunch of previous generation of Arrowwood stickers. So Seth, this is such a great idea. Made me laugh out loud when I saw it, that it is a water bottle covered in camp stickers. And I thought it was just such a great idea. So my tool is, you can go to the show notes and see the link to Sticker Mule, which is the company that we use all the time because they have great deals on all the time. And go have some good inside joke or inside the communities, things that only the community would recognize, and make those into stickers. That's my tool. Gab, what's yours?
I love the sticker idea, by the way. I love it. We're definitely doing that. So mine is registering your dog, your camp dog, as a service dog. It's actually perhaps a lot easier than a lot of people think. So the reason why I came to this is that for as long as I can remember, we've had camp dogs at Waro. And then for period of maybe 8 years, we didn't have a dog because my parents were not ready to get a new dog. It was emotional and they weren't ready, and that is fine. But now they have a new dog. And because we always had dogs before, we never had issues with people coming to camp nervous about dogs. It was just part of our community. It was well known. Our staff and campers were used to it. And then having a dog now in camp, some families are anxious about the dog. Some staff members are very anxious about the dog. And when I told one of our families that we're working on our dog to become a service dog, all of a sudden she was so excited that her daughter is going to be in the presence of a service dog. And it's you know, there's simple things. For example, your dog needs to be able to sit on command, that they don't get distracted by noise, that in restaurants they wouldn't, you know, go for food. So there's simple things that I think most camp dogs are capable of doing. And I think as a marketing tool, it's very cool to have on your website that you have service dogs or therapy dogs or emotional support dogs, whatever category your dog fits into. So maybe look into getting your dog certified.
Such a great idea. Thanks, Gab. I love it. Dan, what's your idea? What's your tool?
Yeah. This book is The 5 Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. And it's written by 2 brilliant authors. I think camp as a whole, most camp supervisors find it's natural to show appreciation to their staff in terms of community. But I think the thing that we always forget is that we're always going to have first-time managers underneath us. Mm-hmm. And sometimes first-time managers, they'll have a void in knowledge. And if they have a void in knowledge, that's where bad habits can happen. And so this is just a really great book that really spells out why appreciating culture of appreciation in the workplace matters. It breaks it down by styles. It goes into statistics a bit about it. It just, you know, like as people are running year-round operations, as people are expanding what they're offering, I think people should always figure out how to include the appreciation in what they're doing. You know, too focused. They always talk about how American businesses are too focused on growth and not focus enough on appreciation along with the growth.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a very simple, straightforward read and very, very well thought out. And just good stuff and good to train your staff with. So
that is awesome. Great idea. Thanks, Dan. And thank you both. And thank you everyone who's listening. I come back to my tool just for one instance, because I wanted to show you that we actually had, as you've listened to the show, you may know that I always close this off with thanks for the evening, friends, which is something good can't be. And we have thanks for the evening, friends stickers made just for podcast listeners. So if you run into me, ask me. I'm happy to share those to the Camp Hacker Podcaster listener stickers. And in truth, I was just a little jealous of the Camp Code stickers that Gab made for them, for their listeners. And so I got some of these made for you. So thank you all very much for listening. Thanks to Dan and Gab for sharing so many ideas. Gab, if people want to follow up with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, they can email me at gabs@waro.com, OUAREAU, or they can follow me on Instagram at Gabrielle Rail.
Excellent. Thanks, Gab.
Thanks.
Dan?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Dan Loves Camp. And my email address is dan.weir@ymcali.org.
Excellent. Thanks, Dan. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. Yeah, happy to be here.
And we always appreciate if you're watching on YouTube, give us a thumbs up or show the show. I hope you do subscribe if this is the first time you're finding us on YouTube. If you're a longtime listener and not a YouTube watcher, I think the best thing is that we hold up the tools of the week so you can see what we're talking about when we post these to YouTube. So the last thing I would say is thank you to Matt, the executive producer of podcasting for GoCamp Pro, for all the work he does on the show, and for doing the editing and posting and writing the blog posts. If you want to see Matt's show notes, see the tools of the weeks, anything that we talked about in the show, please go to camphacker.tv/podcast. This is episode 119. If you want to search camphacker.tv to see what show, and Yeah, we want to thank everybody for this. I imagine that the show's going to come out in about a month, so it'll probably be prime holiday time for most people when the show comes out. So we do want to wish you happy holidays, and thank you for being here. Thanks for the evening, friends.
The Camp Hacker Podcast is brought to you by Beth and Travis Allison, summer camp leadership training and marketing consultants. Thanks for listening. Camp Hacker, bringing your world into focus.